There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions, as decided exclusively by us. Isaac Asimov once said the most exciting phrase in science is not Eureka, but that's funny, and respectfully, we just think you can have a bit of both, Isaac. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not a real doctor, of course, always nice to clarify that.
Yeah.
Not the kind you want if you're bleeding to death, which is ironic because today we are talking about blood.
I'll tell you what's ironic. I actually slashed my finger on a kitchen knife this morning, saw my own blood, drank a bit of it, obviously, because that's what you do, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just like suck it down.
Yeah.
And are you all right with blood?
I'm actually fine with blood. Yeah. Not squeamish. Well, certainly not. I mean, I say that. I mean, I don't want to see like gallons of the stuff.
Especially not your own.
No. But I've cracked my head open. Like when I was a kid, I was always cracking my head open. I've got a lot of stitches. Or had a lot of stitches in my head. Yeah. Just cracking out brain cells. I think I'm fine with blood,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I've got a friend who can't handle anything to do with blood at all. Like even if you talk about somebody bleeding, they basically start to pass out. And and when his wife was about to give birth, the doctors had to give him Valium so he could stay in the room.
Yeah, sorry, I would let you squeeze my hand, but I'm really struggling over here. Gas and air, gas and air.
Not his finest hour.
Blood. It's the thick red liquid that fills up our bodies. The endless pumping of your heart has one job, to continuously send the stuff around your body, and if it doesn't, you'll die. That's because it's not just coloured water shooting through your veins, it's a liquid life support system. Roughly 5 litres worth of it sloshing round and delivering oxygen, nutrition, proteins, glucose, plasma and a whole host of goodness across every inch of your being. But what if it wasn't there? Would we shrivel up like dried coconut husks? What happens if your blood stops working properly? Or it gets old and useless? Surely there are scientists busy in a lab somewhere hunched over and researching ways to replace our blood with something even better. So that is our question today. Could we live without blood?
As ever, of course, we've got an amazing expert to help us answer today's question. So we'll be speaking with Professor Ashley Brown, who's part of the Advanced Wound Healing Lab at the Joint Department of Biomedical Engineering at North Carolina State University and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Just a moment's respect for Advanced Wound Healing Lab.
It's nice, isn't it? It's nice.
Great.
So she works in developing, you know, sort of blood alternatives, as it were.
Right.
And her work is breaking the boundaries of what we thought was actually possible. She's received wide acclaim recently for her work developing artificial blood platelets. Basically, as the American Red Cross declared a blood crisis, supply is running out across America at hospitals and in blood banks. So she's right on it. So the first thing that we asked Ashley was the obvious question, obvious to a physicist anyway, mm-hmm. which is, why do we even need blood?
So most importantly, you need blood to provide oxygen to all of your tissues and organs. Without blood, you won't have oxygen transport, and that is very bad for tissue functionality. So that's one of the most critical functions of blood. Without blood, you also are unable to clot, and clotting is the first step in tissue repair. So without blood, you're not going to be able to heal tissue injuries.
Yeah, master of understatement there from Professor Ashley when she describes not delivering oxygen as very bad.
Yeah. I mean, it tends to be called fatal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, blood is doing so much more than just delivering oxygen and clotting up at my finger. I'm going to give you a quick rundown, but obviously, you know some biology, so I'll let you fill in the blanks.
Don't patronise me.
Yeah, I'll try not to. So all vertebrates, which are backboned animals, Rick.
I said don't patronise me.
They all have blood, birds and fish, but some animals do not. Do you know what? Any idea?
Insects?
Yes. Insects have a fluid that doesn't run in sort of, you know, veins, as it were, just sort of fills the bodies, called hemolymph. We have about 9 pints of blood, 5 litres or so, travels 12,000 miles a day. That's a fact I didn't really appreciate.
How far?
12,000 miles a day.
No.
In terms of just like constantly moving.
What? What do you mean it travels?
It moves in a total.
What moves? Are you telling me a single platelet is not moving 12,000 miles?
No, not a single platelet. Well, I guess the kind of aggregate motion of the
aggregate motion. What are you talking about?
I'm moving on.
You're gonna have to move on.
All right, just
that is. I don't know where you read that, but that is.
You think that's wrong? All right.
Of course it's wrong.
We'll go away and check. Get in touch with the show if you think that's wrong.
If you've ever measured how far one of your blood platelets has travelled, get in touch. We're at Twitter, at EurekaPod. It'd be great to hear from you. Because I'll tell you for free, it's not 12,000 miles.
All right. We'll go back and check that one. 55% of it is plasma.
I don't believe any of your stats. But actually, that does sound about
right. Yeah, and you take out the clotting factors from that, and you basically got what's called blood serum. So, but anyway, so you've got red blood cells, obviously, transporting oxygen from the lungs to cells and organs, bringing back carbon dioxide to be exhaled. Mm-hmm. White blood cells, part of the immune system, fighting infections for you. Platelets, which clot the blood in injuries, stopping the bleeding. And then plasma is just sort of water, salts and enzymes. It's the medium for it all to move around.
It's the carrier, right?
It's the carrier. Carrier.
Yeah.
Also, blood's obviously taking nutrients and chemicals like glucose and hormones around the body. Removes waste, like lactic acid. If you're exercising too much, you need your blood to take that away. you speak for yourself. And it's sort of basically, you know, regulating things like body temperature, obviously, as well. That's why you get red when you're a bit too hot. So that's the basics of blood.
Yeah, I mean, blood fairly clearly is useful. And presumably, we are interested in kind of messing with it or synthesizing it because it's useful to have a backup in case of medical emergencies.
Yeah, I mean, people people have known that blood is like this essential, vital thing.
The life force for,
you know, obviously for millennia now. And basically tried to mess with it, you know, right from day one. So there's tales from ancient Rome about people drinking the blood of dying gladiators, like basically, you know, to heal illnesses. So the idea is you like rush down to the arena and guzzle it down as they kind of bleed to death.
So yeah, the worst bit of that, I mean, obviously it's gruesome anyway, but it's the fact that it's dying gladiators, not dead gladiators.
Yeah, you don't want to be able to suck it out, do you? You want it pumping still, you know.
I guess. Horrible.
In medieval Europe, apparently, people used to go to executions and get it fresh and hot from the bodies that had just been decapitated.
But what was the aim? Were they sort of thinking, well, this will just perk me up?
I mean, healing illnesses, like if you're not very well, you're sort of thinking, well, I could do with some fresh blood. It's at the time when people thought there were like, you know, four humours and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
1483, King Louis XI of France drank the blood of healthy children, basically because he was dying of leprosy. And he thought this might help.
I mean, it's some naughty stuff going on in the past.
Yeah,
we all know it.
And, you know, once you're rich and powerful, I mean, who knows what Elon Musk is doing? So, you know.
It'd actually be more surprising to find out that Elon Musk wasn't drinking his blood. Oh, really? Huh. Yeah, just on the Diet Cokes. But presumably, at some point, people started realizing that if you want to get the benefits of other people's blood, the thing to do is not to drink it where you're just going to sort of process it and then piss and shit it out, but to kind of plug into someone else's supply, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, exactly. So blood transfusions. But as Professor Ashley explained to us, it wasn't exactly scientific when it started.
Blood transfusion was first tried, I believe it was in the 1600s. And some of the first transfusions were with sheep, I believe. And then subsequently, we had sheep to human transfusions. And there was a period of time where there was a lot of work in transfusing different types of liquids into humans. So things like milk were actually transfused for quite some time. That fell out of favor because people, as you can imagine, had a lot of adverse immune reactions to that. But what really contributed to the advancement of transfusion medicine was the identification of blood types and Rh antigens, because that allowed for blood type matching. And once blood type matching was identified and put into practice, it really decreased adverse immune responses and paved the way to larger use of blood products.
So, I mean, I know we can't just sit here and laugh about silly stuff that people did back in the day, but the thought of transfusing milk is really funny. I mean, and I mean, sheep's blood is quite funny, but milk.
Yeah, I mean, sheep's blood sort of makes sense. Well,
sheep's blood,
it?
You're like, okay, yeah. But milk.
Yeah. Interestingly, I mean, I've got a good story about how all this started. It didn't start with actually trying to transfuse blood. So the guy who built St. Paul's Cathedral,
Christopher Wren.
So the standard story is that, like, in 1665, there was the first successful blood transfusion, and it was all done by an English physician, and it was all like, really, that's interesting. We managed to do it from dog to dog, basically. Mm-hmm. And then in a couple of years later, we did one from animals to humans, and then we did humans. But actually, the real story starts 10 years before that, when Christopher Wren decided he wanted to know if you could poison someone by injecting stuff straight into their blood. So instead of making them eat or drink something, it was like, could we assassinate someone basically by an injection into their blood? So he...
I think I know the answer to that as well.
So he was meeting with his mates at the Experimental Philosophy Club, which later became the Royal Society.
Right.
And he did an experiment in front of everyone where he injected opium into a dog. And it died, obviously. So, answers yes. Well done.
Oh, Christopher, we love it.
So, and then sort of a year later, so about 10 years later, Robert Hooke did a dog-to-dog transfusion with a syringe.
Hooke's Law.
That is not what he's famous for. Hooke's Law is what he's famous for.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The dog-to-dog with the syringe. Yeah. No.
We all know him from Hooke's Law, but the guy's getting busy with some dogs as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then they started doing like goose feather quill sort of direct transfusions, and then they did interspecies stuff. But then they heard, the Royal Society got this letter from the French who said they'd done animal blood into a human, and they published this in the sort of annals of the Royal Society. And then they realised they didn't want the French to get it first. Mm-hmm. So they basically ripped the pages out of the annals of the Royal Society.
Fantastic.
And then the French had done like a lamb's blood into a 45-year-old shepherd, who basically took the blood and then slaughtered the sheep and took it home, apparently.
Good day for him.
nice. And then the Royal Society replaced this with records of a British experiment. So Britain was seen as doing it first, right? And the British scientists had paid someone 20 shillings to let them put 32 ounces of sheep's blood into him. His name was Arthur Coger. He was a minister. And Samuel Pepys was there and recorded it in his diary. And he basically said he was a poor debauched man and a little cracked in the head. but this all came to light because there are two sets of pages, 489 to 504, for that edition of the Royal Society Annals. And people were like, why are there two different things? Why is there, like, you know, how can that be? And then they traced it back and it was realized it was basically the first scientific fraud.
Fraud, yeah. It doesn't, I mean, that kind of thing doesn't paint scientists in a great light, does
well,
it?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're starting saying, I wonder if I can kill this dog with opium. I mean, yeah, you know, it's sort of downhill from there, really.
And if I can, I want to take the credit for it. I don't like the fact that the French have been doing stuff before me.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And now we do blood transfusions very regularly, and very rarely do we use milk. That has to be said. That is massively out of fashion.
I mean, you know, not only do we not use milk, we've now learned how not to kill people with the wrong blood type. So, and that's, you know, that took a few hundred years.
Yeah, Professor Ashley mentioned blood types there. I don't think I know my blood type. And in fact, I sort of thought, oh, this is the kind of thing your parents know. And I knew we were doing the episode about blood today. So I texted my mum. And she was like, no idea.
Oh.
So, I mean, well, she knows, but weirdly, she knows what she is and she knows what my dad is. So I think I can work out my options. But
yeah, or we can find out whether you're actually, you know, not one of them isn't your parent.
Well, that'd be exciting.
So, I mean, I do know my
the
blood type.
So just,
yeah, imagine.
Some
yeah. That's how it all started. I do know my blood type because I donate blood regularly out of the goodness of my heart, quite literally, in fact.
Well, do you know, so I've realised that my my position on blood, when I was saying I'm fine with blood and that kind of stuff, I am an absolute pussy when it comes to like blood being taken.
Oh, are you?
Like, and I really, and I, it's terrible. I know I should do it. Like both my mum and dad do it. They've encouraged me to do it. I can't, I just hate the needles going in or when you have to have a blood test. I really don't.
Okay.
It makes me feel not great. And do you remember a few years ago when I was really ill, I kept having, they kept taking blood and I was just getting increasingly, I really hate it now. Like I've got a bit of a thing.
It's not really about blood.
It's about the process of it. It makes me feel quite sort of. I feel guilty about it.
Okay, I do it for the fruit biscuits, really. So you know.
Well, this is it. It's quite nice, isn't it? Quite a nice setup.
It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. Philippa can't give blood either because she just passes out. So I mean, she obviously has some kind of issue where if it's removed, she just goes faint.
If she
and
sees
that's it.
Someone else's blood, is she okay?
No. She's. It's not a like response to. She
oh, it's literally like almost literally, like physiological.
Yeah, physiological. Oh, okay. She just passed out. The last time she went to give blood, she was like, went out in the evening. This was like about a decade ago now, and she just didn't come back. She was like 4 hours later. It was like, where have you been? She said, oh yeah, I passed out. They just had to keep me under observation for 2 hours. You weren't going to let me know this? No. So I do know. So I am O positive, which is the most common type.
Yeah.
It's sort of known. People call it universal donor, but it's not because I can't give to anyone who's rhesus negative.
Okay. So is there a universal?
So O negative is basically
that's everyone.
That's that you can give
one
to
size
everyone.
Fits all.
Yeah, exactly. So that's if you're O negative, you really should be donating blood. I would say because you're gold dust, basically.
So what I feel like this is something I should absolutely know, and it's embarrassing that I don't. I have no idea what a blood type means.
Okay, so we didn't find this out until 1900, so relatively recently. Uh-huh. But it's basically determined by the chemicals on the outer surface of the red blood cells.
Yeah.
So you get type A blood. The cells build a thing. It's an antigen. It's called an H antigen on top of this of the red blood cell, and then on top of that they build an A antigen. This is all determined by genetics.
Right.
And then type B blood, you still have the H antigen at the bottom, but you have the B antigen at the top. And O just has the first layer. So the reason why O is more of a universal donor is because it doesn't have the A or the B, which triggers the wrong thing. And if you mix the wrong types of blood together, they just sort of coagulate. So that's how people died in this sort of early experiment.
Do other animals have blood types then, presumably?
I don't know.
You guess so, wouldn't you?
I think, so, yeah.
But like you'd assume that it's just a...
Yeah, it can't...
A mammalian thing.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, scientists don't actually have a good explanation of why there are blood types. You know, what the difference... What's the evolutionary reason for having this?
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
But I guess in evolutionary terms, there was never a point when people were trying to swap blood, so that wouldn't...
No.
It's not an impediment.
no,
to anything.
No,
it?
I guess it's just, you know, it's just...
It's quite weird, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's once like you start to think about it, it's like, you know, it's sort of mad. And the positive and negative is a protein that's on the surface. So if your blood has the protein, you're positive. If it doesn't, you're negative. So again, these are just all things for the immune system to pick up on. So if you have it there and your immune system is not used to something being there, then it will reject that blood.
Mm.
So if you're negative, then you don't have it and you're all good. So that's basically how it all works. And then you can trace, obviously, because it's passed down genetically, you can trace, you know, what you definitely shouldn't have as a blood type if your parents have, you know, these two blood types. So, yeah. I mean, I casually quizzed my in-laws about their blood type and then, you know, and to see if Philippa was illegitimate, but she wasn't. So that was disappointing.
Well, at least we don't know that from blood.
No, we don't know.
Could still be illegitimate.
Need to test the milkman, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be back after this to discuss whether blood types can affect your personality, artificial blood, and as always, we'll be hearing Professor Ashley Brown's answer to this week's question, could we live without blood?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's some stupid stuff around blood types. So people have had the blood type diet you might have heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically nonsense.
Sounds like nonsense.
And the idea is that like somehow type O arose in our hunter-gatherer ancestors and type A arose at the dawn of agriculture and therefore you should be vegetarian. And type B developed like in the Himalayan highlands and that sort of affects the kinds of things you should eat and drink. And it's just all absolute nonsense.
That's bollocks, right?
Yeah, absolute nonsense. So just ignore that. And then the other thing that's something big in Japan is the idea that your blood type affects your personality. So the idea is that, like, you know, you kind of, it's a bit like astrology.
That's like horoscopes.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. Oh, I love the Japanese.
So they say that type A's are like perfectionist, kind and calm. B's are eccentric and selfish. O's are vigorous and cautious. And AB's are complicated. Complicated because they've got two different, yeah. I mean, honestly. But there's records of employers making hiring decisions based on people's blood groups.
In Japan?
Yeah, in Japan.
Stop it.
And young people making dating decisions on that kind of basis.
That is absolute madness.
And then this is perfect. So in 2011, after Fukushima, you know, the nuclear meltdown, a government minister resigned after offending survivors of the disaster. And he said, I'm really sorry, my blood type is type B, which means I can be irritable and impetuous. Like, it's not my fault, it was my blood.
What a get out.
Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, you know, I mean, there are some things associated with blood types that are interesting. So, like type A.
Yes, but not personality.
Not personality. But type A means you're at increased risk of pancreatic cancer and smallpox infections and heart disease and severe malaria. So, like, you know, it's to do with the immune system response and the antigens and the genes. People with type O, weirdly, are more likely to get ulcers and ruptured Achilles tendons. Which is like,
ulcers quite often, and my brother-in-law get. I wonder if we're both.
Oh, maybe you're O's.
Yeah.
I need to know that. And then norovirus responds to blood type. So if you get an outbreak on a cruise ship of norovirus, basically that strain
it
of
norovirus picks out. The...
It picks out.
That's good.
And different strains of norovirus pick out different blood types. Basically, they bind to the same sort of antigens. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, like, if you're on a cruise ship and you've got a certain type of norovirus, all the type A's will go down with it. And the type O's will be like, what's the problem?
I did not know that. That's funny.
That's good, isn't it? I didn't know any of this, to be honest.
I'm still reeling from the fact that the Japanese are people that I do absolutely gag for. Like, I love those guys. I love Japan. I can't believe they're taking blood type determining personality seriously. Ah.
Yeah.
The only one of those things I take seriously is the... I can't remember the whole thing, but the Monday's child is blah, 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 Wednesday.
Because you take that seriously?
Because I was born on a Sunday, and Sunday's child is like the one who's...
Oh, the best one.
Basically just like absolutely ideal. So I'm like, yeah, I suppose there is something in that. Yeah. So because you are nearly a universal donor, you probably could give me your blood unless I'm rhesus negative.
Yeah.
Thing is, and no offence... I don't want your blood. Can I just get a blood substitute?
Well, that's exactly what Professor Ashley is working on.
I think that we would have a completely artificial blood substitute. So while right now there are several researchers that are working on the individual components and there's some initial research on combining some of these artificial components, I think ultimately, what we would want to work towards is something that really recapitulates all of the critical functions of blood, but with a synthetic substitute. Something that, again, can be stored for really long periods of time. Something that doesn't take up a lot of space. So that's really important for applications in emergency medicine, rural medicine. If you want to go to space, like you mentioned earlier, you can't have products that are going to take up a lot of volume. Right now, natural blood takes up a lot of space. So those are all things that would be really important to design a ideal artificial blood substitute.
I'd never really thought about that, that blood takes up a lot of space. So if you want to go to space with spare blood, effectively, you want to have some like freeze-dried, like you have your weird freeze-dried ice cream.
And the astronaut
and
ice
then
cream,
some
yeah, yeah.
Weird
yeah.
Freeze-dried blood. And so you just, and then just hydrate them both. Lovely little snack. Have your transfusion.
I mean, if only it were that easy. So blood is really hard to cook up from scratch.
Although, hold on, am I going mad here? If I'm having to hydrate it anyway, Then
you've
I'm
got the water.
Water
no, so you wouldn't hydrate it, I guess, would you? You just...
What would I do? Just bung it in?
You just bung it in the platelets.
Mm.
Maybe you put a little bit of water in.
I'm just injecting
You can have
dried,
a little bit of water
dry,
in.
So yeah. It's like a paste. Yeah. Just injecting a paste in. Well, I don't know the sound of that. So could I, in principle, though, have all the sort of ingredients of blood freeze-dried and then add water and my blood's good to go?
It's not that easy. Artificial blood is tricky, right? I mean, it's been a long time coming. People have been trying to do it for decades and decades. And there's so many good reasons to make it, right? Because obviously there's a shortage of donors because people like you are pussies. And not all donors are suitable for everyone, as we learned with the blood type thing. You can only keep blood like as it is, shelf life 42 days. So it's not, not great. Mm. And then we've got an aging population, which basically makes it a lot harder. Isn't it?
Can you freeze it?
You can separate it down and sort of do, you know, you can do preservation sort of things on it. Mm. You've got groups with religious, obviously, and ethical objections to using like other people's blood. They don't want it brought into them. So you know, people have been trying to solve this problem of, like, come on, surely we can make our own blood.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. Basically, people died in trials of previous things. There's sort of two angles to it. So you sort of take out the hemoglobin and try and just sort of do the red blood cell thing on its own, or you have a thing called a perfluorocarbon, which is like a liquid that dissolves oxygen into it. So it's something that's been used for like artificial breathing, things like that. But you know, various people sort of researched it, developed products, but put them into trials, and there were people who died in the trials. So the investors just went, basically the sector tanked.
Investors don't like that, do they?
famously.
How's it going? Well, not a couple dead, actually.
So what people try and do is sort of take out the sort of components or make the individual components of stuff. So, which is how transfusions are mostly given. Like, you don't get given a whole like sack of someone's blood. You get given platelets or you get given sort of red blood cells or you get given plasma. So
is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite rare to give people
whack it in.
Yeah, yeah. Just like... Ah. So you can kind of get somewhere with doing stuff like this. So there's a product called Hemopure, which is basically distilled modified red blood cells from cows. Mm-hmm. Delivers oxygen via the hemoglobin, and it's made by separating the red blood cells out of cow blood, then processing them to produce the sort of microscopic hemoglobin molecules in a solution that the body can kind of process. So and it comes in a liquid sachet, but it doesn't need refrigeration. So you can literally you get it in a cardboard box sort of delivered to you,
like a Capri Sun.
What I thought. Yeah, that's exactly. That's how I saw it. Maybe not with an orange on the front.
And then a little straw, but it's a needle. Yeah.
So, and this has been, this develops in notoriety because one of the Tour de France cyclists tried to use it as a performance enhancer.
Of course.
Michael Rasmussen, 2007. He actually said it didn't work at all. But he was, I think he had the yellow jersey at the time, and he just got, put out of the race for trying to use this. Yeah. So this is actually sort of, in some ways, a product that is successful in that it does a certain kind of job, but it doesn't do everything you want, and it hasn't got FDA approval yet.
So what kind of person would need it or want it?
Well, somebody who's in severe crisis, like there's something gone wrong with their blood, and you need some kind of temporary fix. But let me just tell you, because Professor Ashley is her team is developing artificial platelets, so sort of a different way of different part of the blood. So it's basically the tiny blood cells that control bleeding, and they've had some success in mice and rats, obviously.
Always.
And they're sort of basically at the point of trying to use them in pigs now, sort of scaling up to more sort of human scale stuff. So these synthetic platelets, basically, they might be useful for like surviving trauma, surgeries. Mm-hmm. If somebody's coming in and they're bleeding out, you can sort of stem the problem with this kind of thing. Or of course stem cells. So you take stem cells and you can make turn into red blood cells. And that's harder. And so far hasn't produced anything that we can actually use.
Why is that harder? I would have thought that would be...
I guess there was supposed to be a trial of this like in 2019, which seemed to have just disappeared. And I don't know what happened to it. Yeah. So they were saying, oh, it's really good and we're going to put this into trial. We're just going to like put it into 10 volunteers, like a little teaspoon of stem cell induced, red blood cells. And I'm trying to find what had happened to that. I can't find anything at all.
Destroy the records. It's never happened.
So and then people have tried engineering like bone marrow implant sort of thing. So it sort of produces the
things
stem
that produce.
So again, it's just sort of not quite working. So none of this has got to the point where we can do actual medicine with the whole thing.
So is the approach that people like Professor Ashley are just trying to replicate all of the individual components of blood, or just looking at all of the things that blood does and sort of going back to the drawing board and saying, okay, how can we create something that does all of this? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
there's a slight difference.
I think that they're trying to do the components because the whole thing It's too. I mean, the whole thing is you know, the result of you know millions of years of evolution.
Yeah. I take your point.
So you know, it's quite tricky to just sort of turn up on a Monday morning and sort the whole thing.
I've come up with new blood, I think.
Anyway, I'll let Professor Astley explain what the possibilities are.
Most of what we're talking about is futuristic. However, there are some products that are approved for compassionate use. Specifically, there's a red cell substitute that has been approved. Well, not actually approved, but it can be used for compassionate use specifically for those types of situations. And in those situations, the patient either will receive this emergency authorized product, or they would have to get treated in some other way. And those treatment options are then going to be extremely limited. So their outcomes, you know, are going to be severely affected if they don't have access to therapies that can replace the oxygen-carrying capabilities of blood.
A phrase I love to hear from a scientist is red cell substitutes, which have been approved. Well, not actually.
I mean, currently the only clinical product in use is basically saline solutions that expand the volume of blood, so you can maintain blood pressure, allow red cells to keep working and regenerating and stuff. But some of these products, you know, hopefully will be rolled out within the next 10 years. I mean, that's famously another scientific way of saying,
how long do you
not
think?
Yet. Don't know.
It's 10 years.
And that's all obviously subject to clinical trials.
And otherwise, it's just compassionate use. So how do we kind of define that?
So that's the FDA's term for...
This is the American...
Yeah, the Food and Drug Administration, basically saying it's not really working, is it? But you can imagine scenarios where you've got no other option. You've tried everything. The patient's going to die unless you do something.
Last throw of the dice.
Yeah. Exactly. So there was a woman called Alexis Piper, who in 2018, she has sickle cell, mm-hmm. And she had a flare-up, which basically means that her red blood cells, which, as you know, they're normally round, flexible, and they just sort of twist up and dry up effectively. They become rigid and sticky and like twist up into this sickle shape, which is where it gets its name. So they don't carry oxygen in that state. So she basically went into this crisis where, her blood cells red blood cells aren't working. They're getting stuck in the smaller blood vessels. She's in
and they can't transport oxygen.
Massive amounts of pain. Mm-hmm. And she had a few days of standard transfusions, and none of it really worked. She basically got to the point where she was in a fatal or potentially fatal state. And then they got out the Hemopure. The Capri-Sun. Mm-hmm. So they got a box of the Capri-Sun blood cells, put a transfusion through an IV and saved her life. So it was a last ditch thing. And this thing is only licensed for compassionate use.
Cool.
And it can work. There's about 400 cases where Hemopure has given people enough sort of time to actually recover from whatever's ailing them. Also, do you remember a couple of years ago, the pig brain that people brought back to life, but started cellular function again after the pig had died?
Yeah.
That was Hemopure.
Was it?
Yeah. So they put that in Hemopure, and the there was enough from these cow red blood cells, that had been processed. It's enough sort of, chemical stimulant from them to be able to sort of get some of the cells sort of active again. So it's sort of, basically.
And the pig's like, what the fuck?
The pig's like,
The pig's basically like, well, this is all very Descartes.
yeah, let's be clear. The pig did not come back to life.
No.
Neither did the brain regain any consciousness. But it just sort of shows the promise of we're on the cusp of being able
to do something.
There's something going on there. Hmm. Yeah.
So back to the question, could we live without blood?
So that's exactly what I asked Ashley to kind of give us an answer to.
You could potentially live if you had something that was able to provide all of the functionality of blood. Once we have developed a full artificial blood substitute, I think we could live without blood. In the meantime, probably not.
Like we said, it's millions of years of evolution. Mm-hmm. We don't have good artificial organs, or we're not very good at replicating biology, are we?
Because I'd say we're getting better with artificial organs, though, aren't we?
It's a tough ask. Yeah. And blood is so sort of central and vital to the whole process of biology functioning, you know, our biology anyway, that, you know, it's not surprising that it's really finely honed. And we just don't have the control of sort of molecular properties to be able to do this yet.
But it's a sort of, feels like a complexity problem.
Yeah, it does.
And complexity problems, we usually get there in the end. Is that fair to say?
I don't see any reason. I don't see any roadblocks.
No.
Really. I think there are it's just control over biological or biochemical processes that we haven't yet got. But we're getting better.
We get better and better and better at these things. So eventually, there isn't a kind of obvious obstacle that we won't be able to overcome, is there?
No, I don't think so.
But, which, amazingly, is sort of true of most stuff, isn't it?
I mean, is that our conclusion every week?
Yeah. Give it time. We'll get there, don't worry.
In the meantime, get out there and give blood if you can.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe this is the spark I needed. I'm going to go give it a go. I hate thinking about it, but it's absolutely imperative because there are shortages and we should do it. Also, I'll find out what blood type I am.
Also, think about the biscuits. Incentive. Just think about the biscuits.
I can buy my own biscuits. I don't need free biscuits. I'm doing okay.
Mr. Lardy-da.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. The production team is Andrea Lucia Peters, Luke Moore, and Charlie Morgan. Sound designed by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Professor Ashley Brown. If you like the show, please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a big difference. You can also find us on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.